Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Hello, and welcome back to EB5 Investment Voice. Since our previous episode last week, social media has been abuzz about a new proposed parole rule that may affect some, but perhaps not as many as originally thought. But before we get into it, I would like to introduce you to your host, Mona Shaw. Mona, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Mark. Did you have a good weekend?
I did have a good weekend. It sounds like you had a pretty busy weekend. A lot of people reaching out to you?
Absolutely. Since Friday, well, I would say actually since last night, China time around about 8 o'clock until maybe 2 a.m., constant telephone calls and texts were coming from China relating to DHS's new rule.
I could certainly vouch for that. I got an email from you at 2 in the morning, and I happened to be up, and I'm like, oh, hey, you know, let's do this. Let's definitely do this. So I'm glad, you know, this issue is new, and this show is going to go out within about a week of this new announcement, but not so quick that no one has had a chance to really review and look at it. But it's still, you know, very timely.
Right, right. And for our listeners, we really ought to explain what the new announcement is.
We probably should. So really, the new news is about this parole document for the entrepreneur visas. Now, I realize that this was part of an announcement that Obama made back in 2012, but it's really overshadowed by DACA and DAPA. But it's really breathed new life into it as a USCIS has made this announcement about 5 days ago, judging by the website. By the time this episode goes live, it'll be about a week old. So yeah, what is this parole document for entrepreneur visas? What's entailed? And why are so many people from China calling and texting you on the weekend, Mona, about this?
Well, you forget, weekend ends for them last night.
Oh yeah. So while you and I were going back and forth the email the middle of Sunday night, Monday morning, it's really in the middle of the business day, Monday for them. It's a new week and they're like, oh, it's a new change. Let's jump on it. Mona's our resource. So that's why they're on you.
Right. Well, it came out here Friday afternoon. So that would have been nighttime for China. By the time it really got around all of the social media, well, again, social media really jumped on this very quickly. That was all of these theories and suspicions and ideas came out without people actually reading the document first. So this is why I got all of these texts. But we have on the show also to discuss with us, we have Omar and we have Rebecca.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mark. Great to be with you.
Hey, Rebecca. Hey, Omar. Well, I'm glad we have you both in the room for this because I know we'll touch upon a couple issues. Again, the entrepreneur visas. Rebecca, I know you and I had a deep discussion about that, and I'm sure security's concerns will come up. So I'm glad Omar's in the room to keep us all safe.
Well, basically, Mark, this is a parole document, and a parole is an advanced parole like this is a limited entry into the United States. Limited entry being that this is basically limited on certain facts. And from what we can see and certain circumstances and from what we can see in this document, this is far more stricter than perhaps was originally intended when this first came up with under Obama's executive order.
Okay, well, let's get into it. Vice, you know, doing a contrast and compare of what he announced 4 years ago to what it is today. Exactly what is it today? Why is it so restrictive?
Right. So this seems to be really designed towards Silicon Valley and tech firms. It's not really for people starting their own family businesses. And like you see a lot of people do in EB5, for example, they might start their own franchise or gas station. And the way this is really accomplished through the proposed rule is by having an outside validating factor. And in that case, what I mean by that is they have a requirement that $345,000 be invested by a qualified U.S. investor or a $100,000 grant from a government agency. Or you can come in a little bit below one of those two if you show a very, compelling reason to make an exception.
Well, Omar, let me jump in real quick. You've certainly laid out a couple of actually three different, you know, criterias as far as like venture capital or grant fund or some really compelling reason. But you also mentioned something new and exciting. So what type of time frame are they looking for new and exciting? Is it so many years in the past? Does it extend to, say, today and perhaps a little bit into the future?
Well, new and exciting is actually not in the rules. But the idea...
Well, no, I understand it's your language, but that's why I'm trying to translate it into a rule. So is it like the, I think, what, 2-3 years in the past? A new startup, essentially, not something.
So the company has to be created within the last 3 years. But when I was saying new exciting, they want basically a venture capital firm to be making the investment. They don't want someone to be making, putting their own money in, essentially. And the U.S. qualified U.S. investor actually means a company that's made 3 or more investments in the last 5 years, and those investments were basically successful.
So basically, Mark, what happened over the weekend was we got all these calls from people who thought entrepreneur visas per se were able to get parole documents. And looking at these rules, we can see that that's not what was intended. In fact, in these rules, they specifically mention a U.S. qualified person. And Omar, what was a U.S. qualified person again?
Someone that's made at least 3 investments totaling $1 million in the last 5 years.
Right. So that would rule out a lot of investors and only keep to a certain criteria.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they're looking for something, and Omar, I'm going to use your words again, new and exciting. Basically, a company that was started within the last 3 years, but it has also received the buy-in from domestic venture capital, U.S. investors who've contributed at least $345,000 or more, or you've received some type of government grant, which obviously goes through its own hurdles to get that grant of $100,000 or more. And then there's that third reason of like, hey, you have to have a really compelling reason, you know, for this new business, but such that you didn't receive venture capital funding or a U.S. grant, which it seems like a higher hurdle to me. But yeah, now I can already see how some of the folks in China and other areas around the world would somewhat confuse us a little bit with EB-5 and take what they know about EB-5 and overlay it upon what they don't know about this program. So I'm glad that everyone is here to lighten it.
Yeah, Mark, it's Rebecca here. I think what we need to focus on is the word entrepreneur. I know EB-5, it has the entrepreneur visa in there as well. But here, what USCIS is looking for is those who are actually coming in and having to create their own company, their own business. And as the rule states, they have to own 15%. So the reason why it cuts a lot of people out from the EB-5 is because, if, for instance, if you're in the regional center program or a direct pool, you know, not a lot of investors are owning 15% of that company. That's why they're saying entrepreneurs, that as startup enterprises.
But saying that, we have a lot of clients who would fit under this criteria and have filed for their green card under a regional center program. Often what happens is that somebody doesn't want to be bothered with all the rules and regulations relating to getting their green card and would prefer to do that with a project that's already up and established. So they file their 500 with the project, either a direct pooled or a regional center project, so that they can concentrate on their own business. And we have, as I say, several clients who are coming into the United States to start up their own business.
Exactly. So we already have clients who, maybe one or two clients, but they've already have angel investors, or as we were discussing, other U.S. persons who would invest into their companies to help them get started. That's where I think we're seeing where this is going to take us.
Yeah, this is not really, from the rules, it's not really an EB-5 specific, but it could be connected with EB-5 because they're that's an entrepreneurial visa. This is an entrepreneurial one. Interestingly, in China, there was a translation of one of the posts which was out on social media, whereby they called it an EB-6 and a completely new visa. So
So please, it's not a new visa.
Okay. So they need to own at least 15%, but it's more than just that. And I understand how 15% of a regional center, you know, a multi-million dollar operation, 15% would be quite a significant investment. But they're talking about that the foreign entrepreneur needs to own at least 15%. Is there even a designation on the monetary amount, or you just have to have 15% or more? Obviously, there's domestic funding they want to make sure they bring in, but are they looking at the amount of, say, seed funding that the foreign entrepreneur is bringing in?
Right. So there's no requirement that they had to pay a certain amount for that 15%. So it's possible that the venture capital fund put all the money in and they were just granted these shares. But what they do require is that they have a separate income requirement. such that the entrepreneur must have an income that's 400% of the poverty line, above the poverty line. So that's another way they get at it to make sure that, you know, while they're here, they're still going to be contributing to the U.S. economy.
And not a burden. That makes sense.
Yeah. Where this really differs, Mark, is when we talk about E2 petitions a lot. Because E2 petitions, one of the reasons E2 petitions often fail is when something, when an investment is marginal. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of people who can't afford EB-5 and they want to do E2 for that reason. Or they want to do E2 because they don't want to get a green card and pay taxes. But a lot of times they only want to file maybe 150, 200,000, 250,000, an amount like that. In today's day and age, we often tell our clients who want to do entrepreneurial visas that 500 has such a limited buying power and is not really a credible amount for a business. So you can imagine that when they are talking about receiving significant investment capital of at least 345,000, that's not really very much either. But when you're putting all of these factors together, including a minimum income amount, now we're starting to talk about a certain group of people.
It sounds like they're looking for, obviously, a new startup, as Omar mentioned, something that's 3 years or newer, that somebody's going to come in owning at least 15%, perhaps even more, maybe 50%. But they're not really looking at what they're contributing to the company, but that they'll have enough outcome of that country to be, as Omar says, 400% over the poverty line. Do they also have to have some type of active role into this company, or can they just be, hey, I was the idea person, I'm going to sell this off? Do they need to be some type of crucial element to this new company in order to get this entrepreneur visa?
Right. So the rules say they have to have an active and central role, which I think is even a stronger requirement than EB-5.
Yeah.
So
certainly.
I would say the way to look at this is EB-5 is looking for actual funds to come in the country, and this is looking for the actual talent to manage funds that might already be here.
But Mark, this is not a green card yet. This is parole. This is entry into the country for the purpose of. So I really want to make that distinction clear.
Oh, yeah. I want to explore that in a moment later on in the show, because I want to find out, all right, once this works out, you know, what's the path from here? But I do have like one other last question, or perhaps an example, if I can kind of paint an example, because, again, this is relatively new. There are no current examples that we can point to, or at least that I can point to. Mona, maybe you have clients in your firm that this would be perfect for, but it sounds like this would be for, say, somebody that wants to start up like or has started up something that would be like a Twitter, or maybe we'll call it investor, you know, some type of app, you know, with the R at the end, big R. And they have this idea. They've put some of the technology together. Perhaps they didn't put the funding into it, but they have sold it to U.S. domestic venture capitals, or maybe they've even received a grant for. So they have some funding. But now, in order to really get this company rolling, the person that's crucial to the operations needs to be here in the U.S. Is that really what it's meant for?
I think so. I think so.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. It has to be that active role, not passive. It's not just someone just putting money in just to get something going.
And I think the restrictions we were discussing just earlier today, that some of the restrictions that are here, which have surprised us, are probably an attempt to prevent abuse of such a program, of such an opportunity. Because if they made this lighter, I think there would be sudden abuse here. But this is also proposed regulations. Rebecca, how long does it take for proposals to become real?
They'll keep it open for 45 days for comments. And then after
that's
USCIS. The USCIS will come back and they will go through all the comments. So you can imagine how many comments they're going to have. This was about a 200-page proposed rule. They're going to get thousands and thousands of comments. And you can imagine it's going to take probably a couple months, I would say maybe almost a year, before this even comes out as a rule.
And Omar, don't you think that there will be comments relating to a relaxation of this rule and perhaps making another rule for somebody who wants to open like a franchise and wants to operate it and can't because they can't get here because visa retrogression or delays in processing?
Right. So I think there'll definitely be those comments. We'll just see how USCIS responds to it, because it seems like this really was designed for tech in Silicon Valley and probably lobbying from those groups.
Yeah, and a lot of countries can go for E2s, and they do specifically mention that here, that this is meant for countries where there is no treaty trader visas, and that would be countries like Vietnam and countries like China.
Oh, and India.
Yes.
Wow. No, that's great. I know there's a lot of, tech ideas coming out of India, as well as Indian nationals here in the U.S. that have great tech ideas, but I really don't have a path to an E2. So this would be one way. So I do want to talk about it, but I want to save it a little later in the show about once somebody has this, where could they go from there? But the last thing I want to ask about this is, if this rule sounds like it may fit someone's current idea and their current motivations, Rebecca did talk about the timeline. There's 45 days of comments, and it may be a year before this proposed rule becomes actuality. But what are the things that someone could do today to start paving the path, or putting the steps on the path to be able to use this rule?
It could take a year. It could take less. Who knows? Right now, the proposed rules came out in advance on Friday. So technically, it will go into the Federal Register on Wednesday. So from there, it will start the 45 days for comments. But again, it's USCIS. So, what if they don't even come out with the rules? But I think you're right. Maybe those who have the idea can get maybe start formulating the ideas, putting it down on paper, getting it started, and then just start getting something happening here. They can come in on their B1, B2, get it started, and then hopefully within the next few months, if they get this, they can just come in and just get started.
I think that on Friday, some of the excitement was generated because people thought there is a way that USCIS is trying to alleviate some of the issues coming up with retrogression, because retrogression is starting to be a huge factor in EB5, slowing down the processing of cases and people coming in hugely. Even though there is still a lot of cases coming in on EB5, there's so much more money that could come in if there wasn't for retrogression, so I've been hearing. The issue is here that once people realize that, okay, this is a completely different category, they may just lose it, they'll lose the attention, and it might just go back to, okay, how can we increase the visa count again?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yes, I think this is more for people who are already, if you're going to do a startup, you're already highly motivated to do that, and this is just a bonus reason to do it. So I don't think this is going to really change people's behavior too much.
No, and also it just, because it isn't connected with EB-5, it gives you, in one respect, more leeway, because somebody can come in on EB-5 or any other way they want to, or have an EB-5 going for the last 2 or 3 years and have this whole venture on the other hand. And I think it encourages that. And interestingly also, Mark, look at the timing of it. I know it came out
right before the new fiscal year.
Well, yes, that too. Janet Yellen just announced that the interest rates are going up. At the same time, the pound has not really increased to what it should be yet. So people are not going into Europe as much. They're looking to the United States. So there's a lot of factors at the moment, upheaval in countries and stuff. There's a lot of people looking to the United States because it is stable. It's a stable country to put your money in, to put your startups.
Mm-hmm. I would like to think so. Well, it could be that the four of us collectively here have perhaps looked at this wrong. And one of the things that Rebecca said a few minutes ago is now starting to click with me, that this is really the result of people lobbying for the ability to do this. So perhaps this was, and as Omar said, this isn't going to change someone's behavior because they're already highly motivated. They already want to do this. But perhaps what this is really a startup accelerator that, domestic venture capital firms, perhaps a lot in Silicon Valley, as well as other tech hubs across the nation, perhaps they've been vying for this and have been getting steps ready for this. Perhaps they've already have, entrepreneurs and ideas and things that that could be, explosive if it wasn't for, sorry, you're from India or China, so we can't do an E2 and EB5 is out because you would have to put your own money in. But it sounds like this is really crafted for them. So let me ask the three of you, do you think that perhaps a domestic venture capital firms are looking at this and are perhaps ready to pounce on some things? And perhaps if a domestic venture capital firm isn't aware of this or already has plans in place to take advantage, what could they do?
So I think they've actually been lobbying for this for a long time. I think I read a report that over 50% of companies that are tech companies that are worth $1 billion or more were started by immigrants. Mm-hmm. So I think over time they've come to realize that while it's a solvable problem, it was an unnecessary problem that these firms had to face. And so they've been lobbying for a long time for these changes, and now they're just coming through.
Oh, thank you for that, Omar. Well, Mona, let me ask you, since you're the person that's beginning the phone calls, the voicemails, the text messages, the emails, what are people asking you?
Oh, all kinds of things, Mark, but the questions could really be generalized. One of the questions that I got asked over and over again was a comment as well, actually, that this would have a major impact on EB-5. And would any of these figures or any of these, everybody's worried about visas, would anything take away from EB-5? And I had to explain that no, parole was something different. It wasn't, it didn't have any connection with EB-5. And then somebody wrote to me and said, if somebody took this, if a client of theirs took parole, would they ever get permanent residence, or would they somehow or another not be able to get permanent residence?
So, Mark, I'm going to butt in here. I think the most important thing to for this podcast is that it's parole. So parole, it's not another visa, as we discussed earlier. It's not a way of getting your green card. It's a way of getting in and getting permission from USCIS. So it's going to be a case-by-case basis. It's a way for you to come in and be able to work on your company, to start your company. So it's not a way of saying, oh, well, I have my EB-5, I have E-2, I have all these other visas. It may work hand in hand with EB-5. For instance, as we mentioned earlier, if you have your EB-5 pending, and let's say you have a startup company on your own and you have angel investors coming in and putting money in and investing, it's a way of, let's say you're in China, in India, and it's a way of you to come in and get that company started.
So, Rebecca, you mentioned, you know, people that are outside the U.S., but this could also apply for people that are also in the U.S. Perhaps they're foreign students that are here through some type of STEM program, science, technology, engineering, math, that, you know, upon graduation, they don't want to go into the H-1B lottery and trying to get that job at Microsoft. Maybe they have the next great big tech startup idea. Would this work for them?
Yes, absolutely. A lot of those, it's hard to get an H-1B, as everyone knows. You have to go into that lottery system. And plus, it's very limited because you only can apply by April. So for those who already have the ideas or who are getting going, it would be perfect for them. Let's say their OPT student visa is up. It's a way for them to stay in here to get that going. But it's very important to know too, it's very limited. So it's only a certain time period that you can stay. And as we, I don't know if we discussed this, but it's 2 years that you would get this for.
Right.
That
was a question which kept coming up, that the two-year visa and the three-year visa, does it carry on with 2 and 3 years? There isn't really a guidance on that. I think that USCIS probably think that within 5 years at that particular time, the candidate would have applied for a green card if that's what they wanted.
Yeah, for example, now parole is used with I-45 when you're adjusting your status. So again, that's very limited. It's allowing you to get parole to, you know, if you're not here, if you don't have your visa and let's say, but your I-45 is still pending, it's a way for you to getting paroled and that you're able to leave the country, come back in without that visa, but at least your I-45 is pending. So that's an example of how this would work.
Okay, so it's more of like an extension, a bridge. It may get you a couple more years, maybe 2-3 years. We'll see when the final rule comes out. But at least it allows you to get that, your idea, your baby off the ground, you know, with some funding and see where it goes from there. And it sounds like if you focus on your startup first and that is successful, things may fall into play. So, you know, focus on your startup. Get it going, get it funded, and this may be a path to, let you continue. So, Mona, I know you have lots of questions submitted to you. Do you have more you can share with us?
Yes, I have an interesting one from an agent who works a lot in Taiwan, because in Taiwan there's a lot of people who don't quite have the 500,000. And he wrote and said, oh, can we use this and just come up with 345 and get our client into the United States? I think, Omar, you had a point about that.
Yeah, it's not the money coming from the investor himself or the immigrant himself. It's the money coming from the U.S.-based investor with a track record of success. So while that helps them get around EB-5, they would actually, in some ways, it's more onerous.
Mm. Yeah, so I don't think so, basically.
Yeah, the only way that would work is if you did want to do EB-5, you put your own 500,000 in, but you'd also have to get outside U.S. investors to help you with that. But I think that would be pretty hard to do that. It would be very limited again.
It's not meant for that.
Yeah,
it's really
exactly.
Not meant for that. It's meant for encouraging startups coming into the United States. And I think it's a great move by USCIS. Mm-hmm. So, Mark, one example of a client that we have that it might work for is someone who has, obviously I'm not going to give any names, But we have somebody who's had a very successful IT business overseas, and that IT business was sold for an awful lot of money. And now that same group is looking to start something up here, but half of the group would probably not be interested in getting a green card, or probably not be able to have access to the United States that easily just from the country they're from. So I think, a proposal like this, where, this is money and startup and valuable jobs coming into the United States, and on the converse, they're getting an ability to come into the United States to oversee this. I think this is really going to encourage them to come here and not put their money into a project or put their money into another country where they could move more easily.
Certainly.
Yeah, and someone with this kind of track record of success can probably find a U.S. partner.
I was going to say the same thing, Omar, because they have one of the most valuable things, not so much money, but they have a proven successful track record that domestic venture capitals look for before they put their money. I mean, they put money into ideas and people. Well, really people and then ideas. Can this person execute on this idea? They have a proven track record that they've done before, this IT company, offshore somewhere. So let's do it. Now we have a program or a parole rule, however you want to phrase it, in which that, we've got a 2-year runway in which to be able to do it.
Yeah, $345,000 is not that onerous. So it is very doable.
No, especially if you're talking about, investing into, people that have a proven track record, that have a unique idea. That's honestly, and this is what I think President Obama and the people advocating for this really wanted. They want outside ideas, and they want to be able to open the doors for some of these outside ideas to really, take a foothold and grow inside the U.S. So it doesn't become like the next big, China startup. It doesn't become the next Alibaba. It becomes the next, Amazon. On too, or whatever.
Yeah, it's attracting the talent here to the U.S.
In fact, they did that actually in the 90s, the brain drain.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, H-1B quotas are doing it now. So. Well, I realize that we only have a little bit more time, and we really can't dive into this as deeply, I know, as we would like to. And Mona, I know you get lots of questions, and you're responding to those questions. And thank you for, getting us all together and getting this podcast out as quickly as possible to kind of address, what is this program? And here's some of the big questions. But I imagine people are going to have more questions. So
we all read the rules, but obviously as people have different interpretations and as different ideas come up, things are going to change.
Certainly. So people have more questions, and I'm sure they have more questions because we didn't have that much time to really dive into it. But would you agree if they have more questions about either E2, EB5, or this new proposed rule that they should contact you?
Yes, absolutely, Mark. Thank you. And we do encourage questions of all kinds. We often have people who we talk with for 1 or 2 years before they decide to do anything because they're trying to feed and understand the rules and the regulations here.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Sounds good. So, of course, if you want to reach out to Mona, Rebecca, Omar, or any of the attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, hit them up on their contact form on the website. And, of course, there is a link to that in the show notes. Mona, Rebecca, Omar, thank you so much for coming on today and explaining what this new proposed rule could mean in the near future.
Thank you, Mark. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.